Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. In today's episode, ISF CEO Steve Durbin and I explore his perspective on the theme of our last three interviews. So, Steve, we've just completed a season on digital transformation, and we've had a handful of guests, including Jonathan Moore, Bob Phibbs, and Mel Shakir, and we thank all of our guests for spending time with us on the ISF podcast. But I haven't yet heard much from you about your own feelings about this current moment of digital transformation. What are your thoughts about that? Can you share with our listeners your own perspective here?
The first thing I would say, and yes, all of the guests that we had in this series were very interesting in their own right. But one of the things for me that really jumps out is what a badly named period of transformation we're going through, digital transformation. I mean, I don't see it that way at all. I think that what we're seeing is technology becoming so much more all-pervasive. I think we're seeing an increased reliance on technology. I think that is changing the way in which we as individuals go about doing what we do. But for me, that's not digital transformation. But what we're seeing is people transformation. We're seeing human transformation. We're seeing all sorts of other forms of transformation that are being driven by our dependence on technology. And I think that that is raising some very interesting questions around the whole sort of interface between people and computers. It raises interesting discussions around the role of artificial intelligence, around just the way in which we are increasing our dependence on technology. And if you look at that from a security standpoint, of course, that then brings in a whole range of challenges for the security professional, because not only does he or she have to deal with the way in which you and I interface with technology, but there's also the vagaries of the technology, how the technology is being implemented, the fact that we've moved it to being very much more personal. We've moved it to being not just personal, but operating in a very personal environment of which we have no control. And so we're starting to see the security professional moving more down the road of things like zero trust, for instance, which we have to get to, which again, I find to be a very unfortunate misnomer, because it implies that we don't trust anybody.
Right.
And that, of course, is at the very essence of it. And it should be in a positive way, but I don't know who comes up with these sorts of terms, but it doesn't do much to really try to promote it in a positive way, I would say. Now, loads of people listening to this will disagree with me, of course, and that's fine. But I think we are moving into all sorts of different areas that we haven't been into before. So we're looking at things like edge computing, for instance. We've talked about that in some of our podcasts in the past. That brings a whole range of different security challenges, and indeed challenges to the way in which we as a business might go about really taking advantage. So yes, we're entering a period of rapid, massive transformation that's being driven by technology. And we as individuals, as people, need to figure out how we're going to come to terms with that and best work with it.
What are your answers to how we're going to come to terms with it and best work with it? Theoretically, but also you in your own life and in your own leadership position.
We have to be very practical about it. I think that we have to go back to basics in terms of understanding what we're trying to do and then figure out what the best way of doing that is. And that sounds very simplistic, but I don't think it is. I think we have complicated the way in which we go about doing things. And so stripping it back, you know, we talk a lot, and we have done over the years, we've talked a lot about focusing on the crown jewels, on what's important, both at the individual level, but also at the business level. Being able to do that with absolute clarity is hugely important, I think, going forward, because we're seeing more and more digital toys entering the marketplace. You know, what was very interesting to me talking to Mel, for instance, was that renewed focus on technology. And we're seeing some CISOs moving back into reporting into a CIO, for instance. So that tells you the way in which an organization is viewing security as a technology issue. I still don't believe that to be the case. And I think those organizations are making a mistake. I see it as being a business issue. I see it as being an issue that's related to the way in which we go about doing what we do. And so I think if you view it in these sort of, you know, through the lens of technology or through anything other than what I've just described, then you are cutting off a whole portion of opportunity for the business, because you're excluding that thought around the way in which people use it, the way in which the business needs to use it, and you are taking it down to the level of being a simple piece of kit, you know, a router, a bit of software or whatever, and let's protect that in some way, shape or form. That doesn't take into account how it's being used. That doesn't take into account the imagination, the sheer difference that people in different business environments, different locations, different cultures will use the technology. All of that has to be taken into account from a multinational standpoint by a CISO going forward, because we are transforming the way in which we work using technology to try to get better outcomes.
I think it's interesting that you make that point, using technology to get better outcomes. I suspect that people lose sight. The goal can become using more technology, adding more tools, adding more digital resources, rather than always keeping the focus on why. What is it all for? What's the goal? And it's not so that we have more technology. It's so that we have more successful businesses, more stable, safer, productive businesses in which the business and the people who engage with the business can thrive. Is that a fair point to make?
I think it is in a commercial environment, isn't it? I think that also we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that the benefits, I guess, that technology has brought to people's personal lives. You know, it has brought us very much closer together in terms of people who live in different locations. If you think about the lockdown, the pandemic, you know, technology was an absolute godsend for a lot of people. It enabled them to see, you know, family, friends, and all that kind of thing that they wouldn't necessarily have been able to had it not been for FaceTime or WhatsApp or, you know, Zoom and all of those sorts of things. So I think there's always benefit in technology. The point I'm making, I suppose, is that we mustn't get overly carried away with it. It's there as a tool. I've said this many times before. It's there as a tool. And when you finish using the tool, you put it back in the box, you put the box away, and you go back to doing what you do. And I think all too often we forget that. You know, sort of the always on environment. And I'm sounding a bit of a Luddite. I'm not. I'm just very aware that there are huge mental issues, psychological issues that we have to deal with coming about as a result of the pandemic, but also coming about as a result of sort of over-reliance on technology. The world that very many people see is a world that they see through the lens of the internet. That's not the real world. Now, people again listening would potentially take issue with that and say, well, it is, Steve, because that's how we now live and work and operate. So that is our real world. But for me, there are two worlds. There is the technology world, and then there is the human piece. And sometimes the two come together. Mm-hmm. And if you can manage that interaction, that intersection, then great things happen. And sometimes not so good things happen. But it's hugely important to keep them separate. You cannot spend 24 hours a day locked onto a screen and it not have some kind of adverse impact on your health. Mm. That's just the way that it is. You can spend 24 hours out in the country. It won't harm you. Don't need to be afraid of it. You won't suddenly come back, you know, feeling mentally impaired or have some kind of crisis of conscience or find that your eyes are all bleary and red because you spend a day actually breathing fresh air in the country. And, you know, it isn't meant to be a rant. I'm deliberately emphasizing the need for balance. And when we talk about digital transformation, it's about striking the right balance. Artificial intelligence has a wealth of opportunity if we manage it correctly. Security has a tremendous opportunity at the moment to become much more mainstream in business if we manage it correctly. The way in which we use technology at the personal level and therefore in our business lives has a way to really influence and improve how we go about transacting business and indeed to deliver competitive advantage if we manage it correctly. And for me, the key to managing it correctly is about understanding the people on the other side of it. People, what are they trying to get out of it? How can they get the best from it? And how do we work with them with the digital tools to really make sure that we're creating something pretty special? And it can be done, but I just fear that we are focusing perhaps a little too much on digital and perhaps not enough on people.
Do you have tactics that you personally use in your life to manage your relationship with technology? You know, often people take a technology Sabbath or have hours during which they'll interact with technology. Do you use any of those things, or do you have a meditation practice that keeps your mind very focused and very clear of these buzzes and clicks and beeps of technology in the screen life?
I mean, I've started doing something which is relatively new for me, which is I will put my phones on plane mode at a certain point in the evening. So what's interesting about that is you are completely then shut off from it. Because it's like being in an airplane. And this probably goes back to the fact that I used to have that time, if you remember, when I used to travel for thinking and so on, because I couldn't be contacted. And then, of course, somebody introduced Wi-Fi on the airplane. Wasn't that great? And that went out the window. But so I do that. That's relatively new for me. So again, to air gap, that's the way that I view it. So I'm not contactable. I think the counter to that is that I've probably tried to be more accessible using technology during the time that it is actually on. So if you're going to have a period when you're off, you have to be very accessible and responsive when it's on, I find, which is a slightly different approach as well. And so this thing comes back to that human thing, you know, because what you can't do is rush to respond. So very many years ago, I remember working with somebody and, you know, one of the best pieces of advice he ever gave me was to just take some thinking time. You know, don't rush to respond. Just think it through. And that can be 30 seconds, it could be 10 seconds, it could be a day, depending on what it is that you're thinking about. So I think that's very important. So I've changed from that point of view, and I'm a big fan of a return to in-person, because I think there is a tremendous amount of value to be derived from actually seeing people and taking time to listen to what they're doing and what they're saying and the overall sort of body language. So again, I've dialed down that piece of technology because, as you know, during the pandemic, that was pretty full on, and I was pretty constantly on Zoom or some other pieces of technology, communicating with people in various ways. And so I'd like to think I've got a bit more control back from that point of view. So those are differences. And I think that hopefully, you know, people can relate to some of that. And, you know, hopefully some people listening to this will think, oh, yeah, I might try that. We did, as you know, again, introduce things like meditation apps and that kind of thing in the business for our staff. That has been tremendously popular.
Incredibly popular. That's interesting.
It is. I mean, you know, we felt that mental health, well-being was hugely important during the pandemic. And so we introduced things like yoga online and meditation apps, which we provide to people. And probably the one that has been most durable, I guess, or has endured the most and is increasing in popularity is the meditation side of things. I think for a couple of reasons. I think because it is accessible when you want it. I think because you can just, you know, tune out of what you're doing for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, you decide. So you're in control against this control element. And I think the power of the spoken word has had something to do with it. So people who've been fans of it have sort of told other colleagues and so on, and they've tried it and they've liked it and that kind of thing. But I think it hits on a number of different things. You know, it is this, you're in control. It is the accessibility and it is on demand. And those three things, I think, are really important when it comes to the way in which we use our technology, because actually the meditation app is just that, right? It's an app. It sits on the phone. So that for me is a good example of people and technology working collaboratively together. You know, and I think it's the accessible, on-demand control. I keep repeating that, but I think it is hugely important. It's not somebody else telling you when to do something. It's you deciding when you're going to do something and deriving benefit from it that then allows you to go on to the next stage. So I would recommend, if anybody listening to this hasn't tried, you know, Headspace or some of the other apps that are out there, that you do. I think they're a tremendous addition to your smartphone app library.
I think it's interesting that you're making the point these are tools that people are making decisions about seeking. And so much of the digital world is, you know, I think I, along with so many other people, have impulse control issues. Digital draws me in constantly. I'm not making a choice. I am making a choice, but I feel as though I'm not making a choice to engage in a digital interaction because it's just so ubiquitous and available that it's almost unconscious to pick up the phone to check social media, to always be on, always be on. So these tools that you're referencing are antithetical. They're inviting people to make a choice to engage with them. So that's a benefit, I think, in itself.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Probably as a result of the pandemic, I've become more prescriptive about what I do using which medium. So I have, for instance, gone back to writing more rather than typing, which is a real nuisance when you start to travel again, because suddenly you've got all this paper that you never used to have. But I find that that works for me better. That sort of side of my brain had been sort of left behind for a little while because everything moved onto the screen. I've gone back to reading real books, you know, ones that you touch and feel that have paper. And I think the experience is better. And I think as well, then what I appreciate is when I then go back to technology, I appreciate the value that that brings as well. So the speed, you know, the ability to find out things very quickly, if that's what you're trying to do, and to just see what other people are doing and get that overall view. So I think that there's a real place for all of these different things. We just need to figure it out. And, you know, my concern, I suppose, as we rush headlong into some form of digital adoption, particularly for digital natives, particularly for people who are brought up on technology, is that perhaps they don't have the opportunity to experience some of the things that I'm just talking about. And I fully recognize it's not for everyone, but you never know till you've tried it.
And are you in your own life with this turning your phone off for off hours on airplane mode and at ISF with your team integrating things like the Headspace app or other ways of turning off? Are you seeing results? Are you feeling results yourself?
I don't know that we, and maybe we should have, I don't know that we actually set out real concrete measures to look at the success related to it. You know, that's a very business-driven way of doing it, isn't it? We never did that. The approach we came at it from was much more about the people, about what are they lacking? What are they not getting because they can't go into a work environment? And that's why we instituted some of these things. So now we're in a fortunate position of people being able to go back into the work environment. The things that have been, I would say, successful are the ones that have endured. So if they're still doing things that we set up in that very artificial past 18 months or whatever it was, if they're still doing them today and they're still driving benefit from them, then they were worth doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me is a much better way of measuring the success. Of course, we get anecdotal views. Of course, we get, you know, we do surveys, we do all of that kind of stuff so that we can see what's happening. But I would be lying if I said that, you know, we started out with, well, let's measure the effectiveness of this and how many people are going to get looking at it and what are they going to do? And is productivity going to increase as a result and all that kind of nonsense? No, didn't do that at all. And if I were to do the same, or you know, had the opportunity to do it all over again, I would do exactly the same thing. I would veer away from that because I think that during that period of time, there was too much emphasis on trying to ensure that productivity stays the same, ensure that we're still able to do things. I try to facilitate a way of us continuing to operate effectively during that period with our customers and our people front of mind. And we did have goals around that. But no, the other stuff was just there to really try to be supportive and effective.
Well, I think you've retained much of your team, haven't you? I know that you've had some turnover or some losses of employees, but I think that your team remains quite strong, collaborative, and there's a spirit of connection within the ISF. And I would chalk that up to many things, including your leadership and integrating some of these tools in and not looking at them as new ways to track output and track time and, you know, watch over, but really to be supportive.
You know, I've always tried to put in place a culture of trust. I've always believed that people, if you give them the right tools, if you give them the right environment, will do the right thing. I think that we talk a lot in the industry about attrition, turnover, how difficult it is to get stuff. All of those things are true. It is. And the ISF is no different, right? We have lost people. But my position has been really clear. We're a small organization. And I recognize that our job as a business is to try to give people opportunity to develop, to grow at all levels, and to support them through that process. That means that people will leave because they will want to go elsewhere to experience different things. And for some people, that is absolutely the right thing to do. And we have supported that because for their personal development, you know, they're not going to get what they need in such a small organization. even though we do have a global membership and we work with some of the largest companies in the world and we're doing some of the most insightful and demanding and really interesting work in the security space. For some people, they want to go and do different things, and I'm supportive of that. What I'm also really pleased with, though, is our ability to attract, because we're attracting the right kind of people into our business as well, who have got experience of working in other locations, who do see that there are things that they can contribute to what we're up to and how we're working with our members. And so it balances itself out. And for me, that is really the best of all possible worlds. You don't want to keep people who don't want to be with you. You do want to develop people so that they can continue to grow. That means they will leave. But one day, you never know, they may come back. And that would be great too.
Well, I know that we will continue to discuss digital transformation through seasons to come. Let's link this season to our upcoming season. And we're going to have a conversation soon that gives an overview of the incredible guests that you are bringing in for Digital Congress. But I just wanted to touch on your experience now. You had a Digital Congress last year after 30 years of in-person congresses. And you're looking toward your second digital congress. I'm wondering what you've learned from that digital transformation, what you might keep going forward, what you'll let go when there are no more restrictions. I think that's a really interesting opportunity for you to share some insights, because it was such a huge shift from in-person meeting to a completely online environment.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, digital 2020, we didn't have any choice. We could not put on a Congress. It was quite simple. People were not able to travel. So to a certain extent, for me, the decision was a very easy one. And I made that very, very early on, so that we had as much time as possible to plan for the digital event. And we wanted to try to bring some of the things that we know people really value about our Congress, which is the ability to interact. So we needed to find a platform that would facilitate that. And we needed to also bring a degree of the fun to it that we normally have at our Congress. And so we had to think around that. And so that was when we had Texas do a live gig for us, a private gig. And so, you know, members, I think, appreciated that we were trying to bring them the best of the in-person. Mm-hmm. But the really important thing for me was not to try to totally replicate an in-person event, because you cannot do it. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at it from a totally different perspective. And in the end, you know, we had over 3,000 people. It was certainly one of our better rated congresses. We learned to do things differently. We were dependent upon technology. We had great backup team, production crew, and all of those sorts of things. So where do we go from there? Well, for Digital 2021, unfortunately, we will have to do the same thing. We did, again, make a decision very early that that's where we were going to go. So we held true to that. We maintained some of the things that worked really well. So the platform, for instance, we're still using the same one there. But we've mixed it up a bit. We have created, you know, an exploration zone where members can go and they can do all sorts of things that I'm not going to tell you about, because this will go out before then. And I wouldn't want people to hear about it without experiencing it first. But we've moved it on significantly by thinking about how do we try to, again, allow people to learn, have fun, interact. And we're doing it on a platform in an environment where I'm very conscious that if you don't like it, you'll turn off. Mm-hmm. You'll go and do something else. And this year, we've had to raise our game even further because, of course, attendees have had, you know, 18 months now of experience in their own of how this might look. And so everybody has a view as to what a good online event looks like. And so the bar has shifted considerably. Last year, I think we're in the fortunate position of not many people had done mm-hmm. what we did at the scale that we did. Now more people have done it. And so there's a lot more experience out there. So I expect our members will be looking at it, you know, maybe not skeptically, but saying, okay, well, saw what you did last time. What are you going to do this time? How are you going to improve it? So is that constant need for improvement? And that, you know, the team that's been responsible for it, Michelle and the rest, have done an exceptional job. It will be a better event this year than it was last year.
And there's still time for people who have not committed to it to make the choice to attend?
Sure.
It's not too late, right?
No, absolutely. You can register, you know, right up through to the end of the Congress. So, you know, if you think you've missed the start of it, well, okay. but you can still register as it's going on, and you can still, for a period, watch some of the stuff back on demand. So it's pretty unique from that point of view.
Yeah. Well, I will say, for anyone who has never attended a Congress, they are a lot of fun. Some of my most playful times actually have been, I will say, dancing with your team. So hopefully there will be in-person dances in the future. But also, I remember last year's Congress, Digital Congress, being a lot of fun. So I'm sure that this upcoming Digital 2021 will be another great success. Thanks for talking over digital transformation. And when we come back after a bonus episode and a week's break, you and I will get into an overview, sharing a little bit about how Congress went and previewing, as I said, the amazing guests that you have. So I look forward to that conversation.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Next week, we've got an encore presentation of Steve's interview with Reggie Butler, an interview that was originally released in December 2020. Here's a preview of that conversation.
If I'm working with you virtually, you're in another country in another time zone, what are the expectations for how involved we will be and what we'll be doing at those times, whether they're on times, off times, peak times, whatever it is, we have to create that cadence in a virtual format. You would never doubt, if it were someone in your family, how to adjust and adapt toward a different cadence.
Right.
If someone moved out of your home and they moved to another side of the globe, you would find a way to virtually stay connected if you cared. If you're working with a virtual team, you have to care about them first. You have to know what they're working on before you can create the cadence.
We'll be back with the full interview in a week. In the meantime, if there's a topic or a question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, let us know. You can get in touch at securityforum.org, which is also where you can find a catalog of past video and podcast episodes, along with ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. Find us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. Follow our audio feed wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll never miss an episode. And if you like the podcast, we'd really love it if you'd write a short review. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak, associate producer Katie Flood, mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.